Hi, Chief Halton here at Fire Engineering Podcasts, and we are being brought to you by Tenkata Protective Fabrics and their Made for Life podcast hosted by Stuart Perry. The Made for Life podcast unearths the work experiences of real men and women who rely on the protective clothing and equipment to get the job done. From firefighters to industrial workers to military personnel, recent episodes explore the dangers and challenges of wildland firefighting, peer counseling for first responders, and the ins and outs of turnout gear. It's the Made for Life podcast from Tenkata Fabrics. Find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. And thank you for listening to Fire Engineering.
Bill Gustin, the oldest man in the room with Miami-Dade Fire Rescue from Miami, Florida, originally from the Chicago area. And we're here with Mike Dugan and Bobby Halton and two very special guests. If you'll notice, the only regular panel members are Chief Halton, myself, and Captain Dugan. We decided to give the regular panel members the month off for family vacations, and I thought this would be a great time to have an in-depth discussion of all things foam, engine companies, and dollar stores and discount auto parts with Pat Brown, who authored an excellent article in the May Fire Engineering. And it is called The Right Foam for the Job. And it really struck a nerve with me because of what my department continues to do and doesn't seem to learn from its mistakes. And the other is my good friend, Steve Robertson, who is arguably one of the best hose management, hose selection, fire screen authorities in the country. And he gets around. It seems like I see him just about anywhere that Steve can teach. And I know he does it because he loves it. So welcome, everybody. So you know about us. We know you know Bobby and you know Mike, Captain Mike. So we're going to start with Steve and go ahead and take some time to tell us a little bit about yourself.
I've been in the fire service 32 years full-time. I work City Columbus Division of Fire. I'm an engine company 18, which is in South Linden, one of our busier neighborhoods in the city. I have a class, shameless plug, Stretching for Success, which, by the way, we are doing hands-on Stretching for Success at FDIC this year. FDIC being back, we're doing two full days, four-hour sessions, ton of reps. We've got every station set up twice, so don't be scared by the numbers. You're getting a ton of reps in those in that 4 hours. It's get off the bus and go to work. It's not a lot of talk. So, and then of course lecturing Wednesday at FDIC as well. I just love the engine company. I love the work, and I love taking it a little deeper. You and I talk a lot, Bill, about just different subjects, and I think a lot of those things just really resonate home with any engine company. It doesn't have to be urban. It doesn't have to be suburban. It can be volunteer. The things that we do as an engine company sets the pace for the entire fire. And I think we overlook a lot of the little things that can make make the operation a lot more successful.
Now, when you're stretching for success, will you be stretching key hose?
We will. We absolutely will.
All right.
Yes, they are a proud member of that organization and tend to help out a whole lot.
And I want to shout out to Mark Lighthill and Dave Hibben.
Dave, good very good people.
Unless you can find your razor, I'm still inviting you, Dave, now that you have that gray beard, down to Key West for Hemingway lookalike days during October. So I hope you come and join us there, Dave, if you happen to be watching. Pat, a little bit about yourself, sir.
I started my career 20 plus years ago in suburban Chicago. Learned a lot in suburbia because inner city firefighting is a lot different than suburban firefighting. And the fact that we got just major manning issues in suburbia. So
where did you begin? Because that's where I began.
Palatine Fire Department.
Palatine.
Yes. Learned good a lot department. From those guys. It was a great department. Good really department. Enjoyed it. Definitely. Yeah. But I got a disease. My father's a Chicago fireman, retired, and I had to come here. So I came to Chicago, and I've been here for 18 years now. Fireman on some really good companies. Then I became a fire engineer. Relief for a little while. Then I got a spot at Engine 117. I taught at the Fire Academy, newly promoted fire engineers. I've done some programs with FDIC. Been a lieutenant now for about almost a year, 8 months. Relieving in the 4th District, which is a pretty busy district in the city of Chicago. So I get around.
So were you at the Academy with Edge? Was Edge running at the Academy when you were there?
When I was teaching?
Yeah.
No. No, he was not there. Don Haroma was there when I was teaching down there. Yeah.
Okay. And I in our phone conversation, I mentioned that Engine 117 is near and dear to my family because my grandfather, when he in the early 1900s, took a job as a driver. And that's where a driver was to drive the horses. Right. And he drove out of Engine 117, and then he became an engineer, and then became a regular firefighter, and then ended up retiring after 30 years of being captain of Engine 117. So that's a kind of a coincidence. And let's give a shout out to our mutual friend, our dear friend, Jimmy Davis. Yep. Jimmy Davis. And Jimmy will be teaching the investigation. I don't know exactly the name of the class at FDIC, but it has to do with the fire investigation team and the intelligence that needs to be gathered prior to ascending.
High-rise building intelligence, and the Chicago guys send up. So FDIC this year has just an amazing group of Chicago firefighters participating, including Steve Chikorotis, who's the keynoter on Wednesday. And, you know, Steve, incredible career. I know, Pat, you worked with him for years. And Steve, besides being an incredible firefighter, subject matter expert for Backdraft back in the day when he was a young lieutenant. That's how he got started. He was always into like screenwriting and such. He reached out, and he actually was integral with the Backdraft movie, and then obviously Chicago Fire, where now he's actually an actor on there. He plays Chief Walker.
Is that right?
Yeah, he sure is.
Holy crap.
He comes up and every time he does, you know, the one thing you got to say, and I'll shoot him a note from time to time, and I always get two words back. It's Hollywood. Calm down, right? So, you know he's got to keep it a little bit romantic. But, you know, just about FDIC real quick before we get into the meat and potatoes of what we're going to talk about today with, you know, foam and Family Dollar standalone highly fuel laden standalone commercials, or even sometimes they're contiguous, but highly fuel laden commercial structures that I think lend themselves to foam operations. But anyway, a little about FDIC. It's summer school, so it's going to be hot, but we're still doing everything we always did. Hands-on training. And if you want to take Stretching for Success, don't hesitate to register, because Steve sells out. It's just that simple too. The class is great, so it sells out and people know about it. And also Writ Under Fire, which is being put on by the Illinois Fire Services Institute. They put together a special one-day Writ Under Fire we're going to, which is amazing. So don't hesitate to, you know, get your stuff in early if you want to attend those classes, because they're going to be gone. And they're going to be gone fast, because both of them are already halfway sold out. And we still have about 15,000 people that have pre-registered that haven't selected their classes yet. So if you haven't signed up yet and you want to go to, you know, Writ Under Fire or Drilling at the Speed of Flashover or IDLH Firefighting or any of those, you know, truck company ops, don't dawdle, because it's summer school. It's going to fill up fast, because summer school, I went to summer school several times, as did Pat, obviously, and Steve, and I know Dugan did. It
wasn't by choice.
Well, I have a
Bobby froze, but I have an Irish Catholic mother. And she said, you're not going to stay in my house all summer. You're going to school. I said, but I passed everything. She goes, you're going to take something else then.
Well, I'm really looking forward to this year's FDIC for a special reason, because a very special dear friend of mine is receiving a Lifetime Achievement Award. And I couldn't be more proud to call him my
friend. Who's that?
Be there. What's that? Who's there?
Who's that?
Let's not kill Roy, okay?
Roy was here.
He'll be representing the Irish American community, and he's very qualified and deserving. And I'll amongst other hundreds of people that know him and love him and care about him, we'll all be standing up and giving them applause and a well-deserved applause. And of course, we're referring to our own
Captain Mike.
You're deserving and qualified. God bless you, Captain Mike. And I can't think of anybody more qualified or deserving.
And to continue with our Chicago-based theme just a little bit further, Instructor of the Year, Chief.
Did he freeze on us again?
He froze on
us.
Or he's keeping us in suspense. Chief.
Now after these messages, Kenny. Thank you, Keyhose. Now Chief, we'll give the chief.
Pat Kenny. So, if you don't know Pat's story, man, that's a story. That's a story. Chicago area fire chief, amazing man. And so he's getting Instructor of the Year. So, huge deal. So anyway, enough about FDIC. Please, we can't wait to see you at summer school. It's going to be an absolute blast. Sign up. Fool's Bash is on. Union Party is on. Everything's happening. Fun run, stair climb. Wear bring shorts, t-shirts. It's going to be casual as heck. It's going to be hotter than heck. And That's right.
The one problem is going to be, Bob, I don't think firemen have any t-shirts.
No. Yeah.
Yeah. Pat, if I can ask you, what was your motivation? Did something get up? Did you get something strike a nerve? Something piss you off?
Yes.
Something annoyed you?
Yes.
That was the motivation?
Yes.
And hey, it's all fair game, because I'm going to air my department's dirty laundry in public, because it really struck a nerve with me. Right. And I said, hey, I got to get this guy out.
Right. Well, actually, my first introduction to foam was when I was in Palatine. We went to an auto fire on the expressway, and we were having a hard time putting it out. And the second company was a mutual aid company. They came in, and we're hunting for a fire hydrant because our tank is now empty and this car is rolling again. And they pull off their line, and this white stuff comes out, and the fire's out really fast. And I was like, what the hell is that? And so I go and I talk to the guys, and they tell me it's Class A foam. I said, what's that? And they start to tell me, and we got to go. So we leave, and I start my quest for information. I'm very, I like to know things. So I research the hell out of everything, which is what I've been doing for the past 20 plus years. I became a foam guy. And then over the years, we see the incidents where tankers start leaking and tipping over and spilling, and we see the crash rigs there. And I know that's not right, so I just keep researching it. And this article finally came to fruition because of all that research. Because it's just frustrating when you see these episodes. The episode that really put this thing out was I was in a class for something, I forgot what, with a bunch of guys from other departments. And they had an episode where an acetone truck spilled over. And I watching it on TV, and I see our crash rig there. And I'm thinking that is completely inappropriate, and it's doing absolutely nothing. So I end up, one of the guys who's at that incident from the suburban department was in my class with me. So I walked up to him, and I'm talking to him about it. And he has no realization the fact that everything they did was ineffective and they could have had a major problem. So that just made me really work on this article and get it out, because people need to know, because we can't have guys getting hurt because of misinformation.
Pat, I see two of the biggest mistakes with foam, as you alluded to in your article, is you're using Class B foam for Class A fires, and also too high a concentration of Class A foam, it's you reach the point of diminishing returns.
For sure.
Now, you do mention that when you're trying to protect an exposure, say in a wildlife interface type of thing, you will go with a higher concentration.
Sure.
Because you want a nice big thick film on there that's going to grip. But can you explain the fallacy, the mistake of trying to use Class A foam on, or Class B foam, such as a crash rig,
all right,
on Class A fires, such as tires,
right,
recycling paper and cardboard recycling places, and giant scrap yards. We do it all the time here, Pat. Sure. Invariably, we show up with the crash trucks and cover a Class A fire with foam that's forming a barrier.
Sure. Well, tires are a unique situation because tires are made of an oil byproduct, right? So people think, oh, it's tires, it's oil, I should use Class B foam. And it kind of makes sense. And some of the runoff from a tire fire will be a Class B product, but the tire fire itself is a Class A fire. It creates an ash, which means you should be using a Class A foam on it and not the Class B foam. As we discussed earlier, Class A foam looks for and attracts to carbon. Carbon is the byproduct of combustion of a Class A material. It's an ash. So if you're getting an ash, which we get from a tire fire, you want to use Class A foam because it's going to draw to it. It's going to penetrate deep into that fire, and it's going to allow the water to be effective and cool it and put the fire out. The Class B foam is going to virtually encapsulate it. There's not enough water in the Class B foam to cool enough. So now you have this encapsulation, and now we go to put water on it, and we're kind of fighting against ourselves with the Class B foam. And to make matters worse, whenever we use Class B foam, we have the PFASs that we discussed earlier, and the PFASs immediately get the EPA involved because it's cancer-causing product, apparently, from all our research. So it turns into a mess. Class B foam is not the product for tire fires, recycling fires, junkyard fires, and so forth. It's not the right product.
I'm gonna hit you with a question that I get all the time. Well, what about if we just use the Class B foam in a 0.5 concentration as it was the same concentration when we would use a Class A foam?
I don't think it'll do anything, to be really honest.
Yeah, it's still going to form the barrier. It repels carbon. It wants to form, like you say, I like the word encapsulate.
Right.
I think with the PFAS, I think we'll ask Professor Halton there. Good article this month, or May, Known and Unknown. And he's talking about PFAS. Which is an acronym for, let me get this right now, I'm going to read it, polyfluoroalkyl substances.
That's correct.
So, also.
And that covers a wide variety of chemicals. So,
huge.
That's a category. So, that's a category. And so, what we found is that, albeit with the best of intentions, those chemicals have been used in foams, in waterproofing for garments, and waterproofing for fabrics that cover, you know, furniture and such. They've been used widely throughout American and international production, albeit with the best of intention. So oftentimes, you know, things go into use and we don't find out about their properties until later on because they're not readily apparent, right? So that's why we titled that little piece "Knowns and Unknowns," Donald Rumsfeld, who was the 18th and the 21st Secretary of State, which is unique, he once said, you know, there are the knowns, known knowns, things we know that we know. There are the known unknowns, the things that we wish we knew. And then there are the unknown unknowns, right? So the PFAS and PFOA and PFOS, two broad categories of these materials, the technology to understand their full impact wasn't readily available until the last, you know, years, at least to us in the fire service. So now we're becoming very aware of it. Great researchers looking at it. And we're still not exactly clear. The whole idea about cancer, it's interesting. People want, they want to say that this caused this. And Paul Chillers once said, brilliant line. He said, in dynamically complex environments, you can influence everything, but you can control nothing, right? And so, in other words, the world right now is dynamically complex, and they were trying to waterproof things and insulate things, and that's where these chemicals were created. And now we're finding out that these chemicals are carcinogenic, and they're what are called forever chemicals. So in other words, they don't break down. Like other chemicals, you know, if you buy a shower curtain, and like I had three sons, and every year my wife and I would put on level A suits, because we're talking, you know, kind of a hazmat conversation here, we'd put on level A suits and we'd go clean their bathroom. And my job was always the new shower curtain. And you take the old one down, it'd be very rigid and hard, right? You know, an old shower curtain. And you open the new one, and it's soft, and it's supple, and it's just real, and it smells great. You know, you take a big whiff of that, it just smells great. That's hydrogen cyanide gas, by the way, that you're smelling right there. So take a big whiff of that. There's a great idea. But we all do. We're firefighters. Like, we're pumping gas, and you always go, yeah, I know I shouldn't, but it just smells great. The smell of gasoline, right? And I know I shouldn't say that, but my generation, that's what we grew up working on cars, pumping gas. So these forever chemicals, though, are different than chemicals in the past. And they've actually found PFOAs and PFOSs in the bloodstreams of polar bears. Freaking polar bears have this stuff in their systems. Now, I've been an environmentalist my whole life. My wife is we didn't have a car. Bruno, we picked up Bruno in our brand new Jeep one day, and he looked down, there was in Albuquerque, and there was no air conditioner. And he said, what's wrong with you? And I said, well, we don't want to put, what was it back then? Freon. We didn't want to put Freon in the environment. So anyway, now we got this PFAS issue. Now we don't know, drawing the straight line from cancer to PFAS isn't as easy as it sounds. But we know from research that it is carcinogenic and bad to have in the system. And now we're learning that it sheds and it's forever. So you don't want to wash this stuff into the groundwater, into the aquifer. That's why, as Pat said earlier, he's totally right. The minute you use Class B foam, you got to call the EPA. You got to do remediation. It's a SAR Title III issue. You got to collect it, right? You've got to remediate it. And that's also the issue with the gear. So our gear has this stuff in it, albeit with the best of intention. Not all our gear has it in it. Some gear has it in it. Some gear doesn't. You know, you gotta talk to your manufacturers and your fabric manufacturers and all that good stuff. And it doesn't mean it's going to kill you today, but it does mean that we're aware of it and we should do things to mitigate our exposure to it. And it doesn't mean not wear your bunker gear, but it does mean don't wear it where you don't have to wear it, like in the kitchen or at the supermarket or EMS calls or stair climbs or fun runs. Wear it when you need to protect yourself at a structural firefight and then take it off. It's not a costume. It's a piece of equipment. Think of it like a piece of equipment. If you want to get a costume, have somebody make you one out of cotton, but wear it wherever you want. So that's just my thank you, Bill, for the little draw out there. But that's
Pat, I've because of my dad was a lieutenant on the Chicago Fire Department. When I was a kid in high school, I went down to see Commissioner Quinn, and he signed my waiver, and that was as good as gold. And I met Ronald Reagan. I shook his hand, but it was a bigger deal to me to go see Commissioner Quinn than it was to see Ronald Reagan. And there's a million stories about Commissioner Quinn, but
I had dinner with him 2 years ago, a year and a half ago.
No, different guy, different. This
Commissioner, different Quinn?
Robert Quinn.
Oh, Robert Quinn. Okay.
The father of the snorkel.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, a lot of he was quite the character, but he was quite the fireman as well, and quite an athlete. So even at an old age, but I would be interested, Pat. Can you tell us how you rigged for Class B foam? Do you have some kind of a inline eductor, or is it part of a system? What are you using for Class B foam on the Chicago fire department?
In Chicago, we use an eductor. Yeah, it's we have a really great standing operator procedure for applying Class B foam. It's very, very well written. We have a line going to our eductor. Eductor goes into the foam, obviously, and then we have another line coming off the eductor with the finished product. It's not complex by no means. It's just the fact that we don't do it very regularly. And as with anything else, when you don't do things regularly, you aren't very good at it. So you're not very comfortable with it. But our order is really well written. I like our order a lot. I think if guys would just look at it a couple of times, it would stick with them really well and they'd be comfortable using the foam. Unfortunately, or fortunately, we don't have those kind of incidents very often where we use Class B foam. So again, it's just something we don't do very often. So we're not very comfortable with it.
I like to tell our recruits that starting fighting fire with foam is like starting a fight with a big guy. You better be able to finish what you start. Mm-hmm. And my most graphic, memorable occasion with this is in 1977, I was with Naperville. And we responded mutual aid to the Union 76 refinery in Romeoville, Illinois. And it was quite a scene. And we had a 300-foot diameter tank and managed, along with hundreds of other firefighters, to apply enough foam just over the top to almost is like a little bit pregnant. Mm-hmm.
it don't work.
Almost had it completely out and they ran out of concentrate. Right. And Pat, it went from just like you could see one little flame. Mm-hmm. I'll never forget that. It just started growing back.
Burned it all off.
Yep. And we burned, we got to get off the dike. And we burned up our hose. They had to buy us all new hose. It was quite the mess. And that was in 1977.
Right.
But that was a young, new in my career, and it was quite an experience. And then how many containers? Are you using a 3%?
Well, we have the alcohol-resistant foam on our rigs. We generally use 3%. Those rigs that have Class B foam have anywhere from 25 to 30 gallons of Class B foam on the rig to use initially. But as you stated, initially is not good enough. You got to have what you need from the very beginning.
I mean, sometimes you have to wait for another company without to get question. There to make sure you got enough foam.
We have a response in which we have a truck that will come out with, you know, like 100 containers of Class B foam. So if we need that, we have the accessibility for, you know, a large quantity of Class B foam concentrate to come out. That's not a problem at all.
And are you flowing about 125 gallon a minute on those foam lines?
Yeah, 120, 150, yeah.
All right, so you got about 1,200 square foot or about 600 square. Oh, is this stuff thicker than bull snot?
In the concentrate form?
Yes.
I would say bull snot, but it's pretty thick.
Bull snot. Well, hey, you want to see bull snot? Pour the Class B foam in
that's
with the
bull
Class
snot.
A. That's
yes.
some bull snot.
That's bull snot.
Yeah, yes. Go ahead and mix them and see how that works out.
Exactly,
yeah.
Right. That's bull snot, yes.
Yeah. No, but on the topic, Bill, just to dovetail on what Bill was just talking about, Bill was talking about going out to fuel fires. Patrick ends the article, and I strongly recommend you get the article, May edition of Fire Engineering, shameless plug, but seriously, page 51, steal somebody's copy, read it. He ends when we're talking about using the right foam. And Pat, if you don't mind, just kind of, you know, go a little bit into blended fuels and selecting the right foam because of the ethanol issue. So,
right. Most of the foam... The foam that's on the crash rigs, for the most part, is not alcohol resistant. Unfortunately, most of the products that are carried in tankers today have some form of alcohol in it. We see E85, you go to the fuel pump, it says 10% alcohol, and it's really, really hard to find a gasoline product that doesn't have alcohol in it, which makes our use of non-alcohol resistant AFFF questionable at best. Is it going to be effective? Probably not. Even at the 6% concentration, which we used to always be taught, when it's alcohol, go from 3% up to 6%. It'll be more effective. That's questionable at best, depending on the foam that you're using. So it's not really recommended that you use a non-alcohol resistant foam on most of these gasoline products. Alcohol, non-alcohol resistant AFFF is great for like a diesel fire, because there's no biodiesel right now that's readily used. You might find it occasionally, but it's not for the most part readily used. So if you have a diesel fire, it'll be great. If you have a jet fuel fire, it'll be great. But for most gasoline fires, and for definitely any kind of alcohol-based fire, ethanol, ketones, so forth like that, regular AFFF is not going to work for you. You need to have an alcohol-resistant product. And then by manufacturer, some alcohol-resistant products might be fine all the time at 3%. Others you might have to adapt accordingly per your manufacturer's recommendations from 3% to 6%.
So one last thing I want to hit you with. My phone's blowing up with our friends that are watching us live. And Jess Milner, I don't know if you know Jess. He's from Denmark. I hope I'm getting that right. Could be Sweden. Jess is going to text me in 2 seconds and say, I got it wrong. But I believe it's Denmark. He's Danish. And he was talking about foam, and he said, the F500, are you familiar with F500, Pat?
I am not.
I'm familiar with tire
fires and F500?
I'm familiar. It's a micelle encapsulator, I believe. I don't believe it's a UL rated foam.
Okay.
I could be totally wrong on that. It's one of these micelle encapsulators where, if I remember right, and again, I could be totally off base here. There is a family or a category of wetting agents that, you know, one of the cardinal rules of applying foam is gently, gently. This, you want to agitate it because it forms an emulsion. And it encapsulates the hydrocarbon molecules. Like I said, I could be totally off on that particular brand, but it is something. A word of advice.
Jess is going to put it up on this Facebook link in the comments section. So those of you that are watching it on that highly questionable, awful thing called Facebook, no opinions here.
All right.
He says please. It's up there.
Take a look at it. So Jess said he's going to put it up there for y'all to take a look at if you're on Facebook. I am not on Facebook, nor will I ever be. So we'll leave it right there.
You just got sour grapes, man. Sour grapes.
Hey, if you do things that are bad for America and bad for free speech, then I'm not going to talk to you.
I hear you. We're going to kind of change subjects here for a while because I want to talk to Steve. Steve and I recently were working together, and he feels very passionately that I do, that what America needs more, we need more discount auto parts in dollar stores. One on every corner in every city in every town in the United States is not enough. And you mentioned something. Our code here requires anything over 25,000 square feet to be sprinklered. Well, wouldn't you know
right,
that you're going to be 2,499 square feet. That's, so you're never going to see these sprinklered.
That's their company policies, and that should tell you all you need to know about their attitude towards fire protection.
Generally speaking, though, right? I mean, we can look at McDonald's, Burger King, they're all the same. They don't care about us. They care about making money, and they're not going to put the fire suppression systems in these buildings. They're throwaway buildings for them.
Most are not even insured.
Exactly.
Most are not insured for fire.
Right.
Oh, they're not insured?
No.
Yeah.
No. They don't care about them, so why should we? I don't understand.
I mean, they rebuild 30 days. Right? 30 days.
You would think those Velvet Elvis serving trays would be almost priceless.
Yeah.
Listen, I tell this to my wife all the time. It's a dollar store. Everything in there is for sale for a dollar, and they're making a profit.
For sure.
You get what you pay for.
Right.
Mike, well, I got you. An EFDNY for commercials. I know I've asked you this before. Is there any set limit to how far deeply you can penetrate into a commercial with a hose line?
No. No, okay. There is not. But again, this goes into the training of all of our officers in rank. It goes to flips for the first line supervisor, which is the lieutenant. It goes to the captain's management, goes to the battalion chief's courses. To be a battalion chief, you got to go through 6 weeks of training. To be a deputy chief, you got to go through 6 weeks of training. All of these classes, they talk about these things. We have lost members, Michael Riley and Howie Carpenter, in a dollar store. Okay, where it collapsed, where the floor collapsed, and they were talking to them, and they could not save them. Okay, and Howie Carplunk was a fireman in the 31 truck, and when I was in 42 as a lieutenant, we were in the same firehouse for a while because our firehouse was being worked on. He was a great guy. He was a great guy. Michael Riley was a Marine, a veteran, came home, came to the FDNY, and Howie Carplunk was worried about his kid that was under it. You got to think about these things. As far as if they're built, if they have a basement, and not a lot of the, a lot of the country doesn't have basements, they have storage in the back. They have a storage room, but you have to think about the storage. How much stuff is in there? Then you have to think about if we have a fire, the collapse potential. Okay, and all of this stuff, a majority of it is plastics. It's a petroleum byproduct. It's hydrocarbon fuel. It's a fuel mixture. Okay. All of these things lead to a problem, okay? And again, I love fighting fire. But if I didn't go to another dollar store in my career when I was done, I wouldn't have had a problem with it. Once all the people are out, what is the risk versus reward potential? I mean, again, I'm going in there with you to search to make sure that everybody is out of that store. But once we get all the people out of there and we're confirmed that it's out, as they said, they're not going to, they're not insured. They don't have sprinklers. They don't have anything. And the load of stuff that is in there, the potentials. So first off, the lines, okay? Got to be minimum of a 2.5, okay?
I disagree with that.
What's that?
I disagree with the 2.5, but we'll get to that in a minute, Mike. I only have 2-inch, but 240 gallons a minute, 265, it's still a ton of water. But I'm looking at maneuverability. I'm looking at, because you're looking at 6'8" guys on that 2.5.
And right? Again, it depends on the situation. But absolutely. I'm going to say to this, and we used to do this all the time, is open up the deck gun and knock it down from outside if we can. Mm-hmm. Hit some water in there. As they say in UL, reset it, knock it back, buy us a little time to get in there. And I understand the difference between the 2 inches. As long as we're flowing a maximum amount of water, that's fine. Okay, that's fine. But we have to have a bigger line. If you're taking 1.75-inch line into there, you're not doing the right thing for your people. Okay, agreed. You're not doing the right thing for your people. And it depends on the layout of the store and the turns and everything else. If you can see where the fire is burning towards the back of the store and you got a straight shot with a 2.5, I'm all for it. But you have to think about all of these things. And you have to think about where else the fire is up over your head, where it's burning. Okay, and the collapse of these racks, the high pile storage that we have in some of these places, there is so much stuff stored up on top, crates and boxes of stuff that have come from wherever they're coming from in their containers, and they're full of plastic wrapped in cardboard and ready to just combust. Okay, and we got to look at the risk versus rewards in this.
The higher the overhead.
One quick point to make real quick before we go any further to dovetail. We're not just talking about Family Dollar, Dollar General. Please don't take it that way. That we're just putting a name to a broad category of businesses. It could be an antique store. It could be a whatever, you know. But what we're talking about are independent stores. Sometimes they're contiguous, like the Family Dollar that Howie and Christian died in. That was contiguous. It was a series of stores. And in order to create more storage, they had modified the basement by taking some support columns out, which precipitated the collapse. But what we're talking about is these places that have incredible high density, like Patrick's basement. If you look behind him, the stores look just like they said. He's throwing you right under the bus, Pat. You knew that was coming. You knew at some point I was going there. So
you're looking at the good part too.
I'm looking at the good part. But what we're talking about are these places that have an incredible density of primarily carbon-based, you know, polymer-based plastic stuff that's packaged in polymer-based plastic stuff that ignites very easily, that burns very rapidly, and gives off a tremendous amount of energy and gas. And so it expands fast, it moves fast, it requires a lot of water. You know, we could get into the nuances of 2.5 versus the 2-inch. I think a lot of people are messing around with the 2-inch now and seeing some great stuff. But these fires require a lot of water when they're active. And then to Mike's point, if they're in a repurposed building, you got to be really aware of what might have happened before they were there or what they might have done to make it usable to them. If they're in one of those standalones, though, Steve, and you and I were talking about that, you know, these kind of like a button, no disrespect to the Butler Company, they make a great metal building, but you know, they're basically, they've got the brick facade, and then you look down the sides, they're just aluminum built, you know, they're just metal frame buildings.
Tight tubes. Most of them are all tight tubes. The metal right. deck one.
And when you look at
the tight twos, and I think this is important to say, especially to go along with what Mike said about big water, 265, 240, we're almost splitting hairs. I'm looking at a couple things. A, your staffing, and can we maneuver that line, right? We got to find that wheelhouse. But number two, let's go back a little bit and let's take the information that UL has already provided us that we've learned from, and let's look at the water mapping study, and let's look at what water mapping does for the type two. That metal deck roof, we've got to put water up high, yes, but we have to bring our stream down. We're not, the velocity of the stream is not going across that metal deck like we think it is. It's going straight down. So a lot of that big water that we're putting in there, we have to ensure we bring that, after we cool, we have to bring that stream down so we're actually penetrating and reaching what's on fire. You know, and I think something that we also forget to talk about is the partition walls in these things. But 99% of these things have a small partition wall between the storage area and the retail area. So if you get a hell of a fire in the storage area, you're going to have a hell of a fire above you and not even know it. You could have light smoke. And
keep Hackensack Ford in mind. I know it's a different kind of fire, but people will store above.
Absolutely.
So
absolutely, Bobby. We have seen that in the city. I have seen them take the web members of the truss out, put plywood down,
put storage
out, to put plywood down, to put stock up there, and it's over your head. And I've also seen them in some of these on metal bar joists, put pieces of plywood across the bar joists to put the stuff up in there so they have more storage. And it's a great point. And the other thing, just so we're all, it's not just dollar stores. The other one that I see in this whole category is party supplies and things along that line, where they have all the paper products, the plastics, the balloons. They also have some of the flammable gases in there and all the other stuff that they're going in there, and the candles, and all, it's anything with a high amount of storage in the building.
I wonder what the deflection temperature for those, do you know, Bill, for those metal, you know, plates?
Unprotected steel bar joists.
But are they steel? I don't even
know. Yes, they are steel.
They're steel.
Yes, they are steel.
It's 1,000 to 1,100 degrees.
Yeah, 1,100 degrees.
Well, I know they're on steel, but I've seen some of those, you know, those prefabs.
That's more the McDonald's. That's more in the fast food restaurants that I've seen, that you see the prefab wood than it is the metal.
I watched the Family Dollar go up a mile from my house using them.
Really?
I'll get you pictures.
Yeah, I'd like to see that. Most of you see that are the metal shell.
Sure.
Are the bar joists. Right. But it's been my experience seeing
that. Yeah, no, I've seen that too.
I think the other point to bring up is, you know, you were talking about that as we were remiss to say, here we are, you know, less than a week away from June 15th, 2003, Memphis, Tennessee. You had Trick Kirk and Charles Zachary lost their life in a Family Dollar. And something we don't talk about enough, I don't think, is, you know, they had light smoke showing. So if we think about the layout of a Family Dollar and we have light smoke showing or any of these retail joints like that, the first thing we have to do when you step foot inside that structure is pop a ceiling tile. You have to pop a tile to know what's going on above us, because light smoke in the retail area doesn't mean you don't have a hell of a fire in the back. And you know what? Why would we take and stretch 100-foot of line or 150-foot of line straight down all the way to that storage area, when every one of these stores have? They have a big double door in the rear that we could force that double door and have complete access to the real fire location. So if you get inside these things, you pop a tile, you've got smoke, make the transmission. Hey, get this from the rear. We're not going to come in inside here. We're going to get it all clear right here in the retail area. Let's get this thing from the back. Get an engine to the rear, stretch to the rear. Take a direct shot at it. Because, you know, Bobby, you and I were talking about it. Every one of these things that has unfortunately led to a line of duty death in these, a lot of these go from perfect visibility to zero visibility in no time flat. And you know, let's be realistic. Are we really going to drop a rope, walk it in with light smoke? Well, probably not going to have our mask on, right? I'm making a realistic statement here that
so
we are who we are.
Well, here's where I love having this group. And Pat, if you want to join us at FDIC, give me a shout. I'll get you on the dance card. But because I know you'll be there in 22, but if you're not busy this summer, you want to come down and mess around. But so Steve, Billy, and Mike, here's where a couple of things you just said, Steve, are so important. And I'd like to hear everybody talk about this for a second. The first thing is, it's not questioning why the guys would stretch 100 feet down to the back. It's figuring out why any one of us would do it. And the reason why we would do it, just like they did it, because if we do it 99.9% of the time on 99.9% of our fires, we start thinking we can do it on that one. And the family, and the standalone commercial heavily loaded, is that 1 in 100 fires, 1 in 200 fires, 1 in 3, whatever it is. It's not as routine as we're making them sound to be. They're not like your house fires. They're not like, you know, Bill, I get a picture every two or three days by a photographer down in Miami-Dade of a bungalow style, flat roof, single story residential home, which you could stretch that line straight through the front door all day long, size 13, you know, door opener on the front door, and a wet spot in front of the house in a half hour. This isn't that fire. And the other thing, when you talk about going around the back, nowadays we get around the back and those doors, now they're doing those armor doors, and you got to know what you're doing when you get back there. And so get into a community like mine, and Billy, you've been at my volunteer fire department. We're not heavily staffed. You know, we're a combination fire department. So we might roll up initially with, you know, two or three firefighters on the first due engine, two or three on the second due engine. And, you know, and I'm not saying we're bad. I'm not saying we're good. I'm just saying that our minds are like water. We'll go to like that path of least resistance, that first best option, right? And so, you know, I'm always very leery. The guys in Memphis that stretch that line, God bless them. You know what I mean? And their book, the great grace of God goes me too. You know what I mean? Because you get caught up, right? And what we need are more guys like you, Steve, teaching us stretch, more guys like Billy's, who's got, you know, reams and Mike, they got reams and reams of fires, Pat, that can say, hey, you know, I get concerned sometimes because everybody talks about moving fast, moving fast, moving fast, which is great. Move fast, but move fast deliberately and smartly. You know what I mean? Have a freaking plan.
Yeah.
It's not just moving fast.
You can't take your residential mentality into a commercial structure. It'll get you killed.
As Bruno said,
you cannot take a residential mentality into a commercial fire because they're not the same animal.
And very honestly, if you don't go in there, as you said, Steve, and pop a tile at the front door to see what's over your head, and if you are good as an officer and practice with that thermal imaging camera, you will then determine the roof type of construction, because you'll be able to see it. If you can see all the way up to the roof, you'll see what the heat signature is up on that roof, and you'll know what the conditions are in that store. If you don't do that, shame on you.
Yeah, and you're putting everybody at risk.
What's that?
You're putting everybody at risk, and you're starting down the same path that we've already, unfortunately, had line of duty deaths because.
Yes, and a failure. And if you don't take the time, as Bobby said, to make sure that, you know, move fast, deliberately, but also understand your surrounding. That size up, you have to do that 360 above. Also, if it might be a basement below you, where is it? You don't want to go in on that first floor if the fire is in that basement. The Mary Pang fire in Seattle, where they didn't even realize there was a basement in there. Okay, the guys fell into the basement. It was a large line of duty in Seattle. We have to make sure of this. The fire engineering, when I wrote that one, I wrote the fire focus on that because they had an unusual building where they went in and the stairs to the basement opened up. They turned it into living space. The basement So it was a wide open. So they were really fighting downstairs to put that fire out. So there are different things. You have to know your buildings. And you have to know what your all six sides of that fire.
You have to use your tools. That's a big problem. That tick camera is such a valuable tool, and guys still minimize that thing. It's an awesome tool. It should be. It's more important than your flashlight. Your flashlight ain't going to see through most smoke. That damn tick camera is going to see through everything for the most part. Once you pop that tile, you're going to get a great view up there with your tick camera. You're not going to see nothing with your flashlight.
And if I could add this, if you're an incident commander, you have to have realistic expectations of how long it's going to take to force those rear commercial doors. Mm-hmm. Now, that is not to say that you couldn't cut a triangle, cut something, or curve something where you could just stick a nozzle in there. One of the gutsiest moves I ever saw, and this was a young lieutenant, went to a like an Osco drug. You still have Osco drugs in the Chicago area?
Oh, yes.
Okay, so about 200 feet deep during the holidays, big fire hazard during the holidays because you got empty and full cardboard boxes packed up in the back. You're not, and that's where the fire was. Determined to the best of his knowledge, the employees and the customers were out, got back in the rig, went around to the rear, dropped a line at the alley, and laid into the building, and the door was red hot, the metal door, and they just cut a triangle in it at first and shoved a 2.5-inch nozzle in there. And by the time they did get the door open, it the roof had collapsed in that area. And you want to know something, Pat? At that time, and actually today, would you be criticized by your brother firefighters for delaying the attack because you chose to go around to the back that was locked up like Fort Knox? So this fire continued to burn because you needed to go around the back. And you will, sometimes we're our own worst enemies when it comes to judging each other.
We were just, it's funny you're talking this
because we were just discussing this recently. We've had many incidents with back porches lately, and we normally don't like going into alleys, but in my old battalion, when I was still a fireman, our chief was a big fan of getting back there and using our deck gun to knock down those back porches. Unfortunately, when you do that, you usually give up the front of the building. So then the second in engine company is going to get the first line through the front door. And that's something you just gotta be okay with. It's about putting the fire out. It's not about, getting through the front door necessarily. I mean, there's been times when I've put out three double deck back porches with a deck gun, and they had very little to do when they got through the front door. Well, you get chewed out a little bit on occasion. So what? Whatever. You got to be comfortable with yourself. If you're not, then you're not going to be very good at this.
Well, it's totally consistent with the UL Attic study that any fire that starts spreads to the exterior, a combustible exterior, that could be mulch, it could be a deck. People over there in Bobby's neck of the woods, they're constantly frying turkeys out on their deck while they're listening to Garth Brooks music and playing their banjos. Some people don't exercise the best judgment when they're frying turkeys out on their deck. Fireplaces.
Ours are usually barbecuing, that's for sure.
Barbecuing, on the rear porches.
On the rear porches, of course.
Well, what the study is, the first line has to go to the fire at the exterior of the building. And that's the back porches, that's the rear deck. In your day, buildings had gasoline siding, which is your faux asphalt, and back porches. What do we have in suburbia today? Vinyl siding. And big wood decks.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's just perfume on a pig.
And Bill,
go ahead.
I just want to say one thing. If you're interested in this conversation, it behooves you to take a look at the Forgotten Fire, the Father's Day Fire, on in 2001, before the World Trade Center. So it's the forgotten fire where we lost three firefighters in the hardware store in Astoria, Queens. And the building blew up. If this conversation about getting things in there and storage and materials and all that, look at the line of duty report from that fire. I have friends who were there. I was not there. I have friends who were there and tell the stories of what happened at that fire, and it was horrific, okay? And we lost three great firemen from New York City at that fire. But again, it is something that you have to look at. You have to know your buildings and be aware of it, because they were going in, they were trying to get in on the first floor, and the fire was below them, and they didn't realize it, and there were problems. Study that. Look at that. Bring that up.
And that report was also supervised and partially written by one of the greatest living firefighters of all time, Al Turi. And Al, besides all he did in making New York Fire Department what it was, he helped incredibly in the recovery. Probably one of the greatest living firefighters of all time, if not of our generation. And Al, that report is one of the best written reports of all time, bar none. And to Steve's point, I think Steve should talk a little bit more about the water mapping for folks that don't know what he meant. But as Steve said that, one of the things that Al said in that report, and I can't remember, he was quoting Frank Brannigan, and Frank Brannigan once said that if they don't want to put in a sprinkler system, when we get there, we'll do it for them. And what he meant was basically aggressive water mapping. In other words, getting water not only to the scene of the fire, but onto the possible communicable areas where it could go, right? And so, Steve, I just want to make sure that people don't gloss over, you know, what you meant by that, because sometimes we'll throw out terms that, and we kind of, because we're all, you know, the five of us spend, this is what we do all day long, every day, but, a lot of our friends. And then we got a great Facebook comment that I'm going to throw out there for Bill to address after while Steve talks about mapping. Bill, if you'd think about this, came from Matt Bounty and Bonnie, and Matt asks, so when these places get inspections, assuming the authority having jurisdiction performs them, to what penalties are given out? Do you advertise the penalties outside? Because businesses won't voluntarily comply unless they think they'll get in trouble. So why not advertise the severity of the penalties, not just rely on the LODDs? Kind of like a public shaming thing, I guess, like how they do online these days, like, you know, the virtue signaling thing. I don't know if that's what Matt's talking about.
No, I can indirectly answer that. And that reminds me of a conversation that Mike Dugan and I have had, that if you're riding a fire apparatus and you find a blatant, dangerous, acute fire hazard, like blocked exits, it is your job. It is your duty to act. And you act, you have to take action immediately. And you have to know on your department, how do you get a hold of your fire marshal, or how do you get involved with, it may have to be the police. But there's been case histories, you know this, Bobby, where the fire department is denied that they had knowledge of a illegal assembly occupancy, when in fact fire companies had been there dozens of times on medical calls. So it is, the Bureau can't do it by themselves. We've got to be the eyes and the ears of the Bureau. And it is our duty to act. Mike, I think you mentioned that you actually get a division out there, and what is your procedure for this?
This goes through the battalion, the division. The division calls the command chief, the citywide tour commander, on duty, and they get the buildings department out there, and, I mean, we have to start vacating them. We get people out of there. We get the Red Cross involved. We do all of this. We are not walking away from this. We are not walking away from this, because God forbid you walk away from this and there's a fire and somebody dies.
You're done.
You know, you're going to be the one that's going up there. And this, I think we should have a discussion on this on another one, but I still want to finish up listening to Steve talk about water mapping for some of the young men and women out there who don't know exactly what he's talking about.
All right, yeah. And we, Peter, we're no hard and
we're
fast.
We're fine. No, we're fine, buddy. We're fine.
Okay,
we're
okay. And I just want to just give a shout out to our friends at Key. That's keyhose.com. They have a lot of different varieties and grades of hose. I like the Combat Ready. However, the True ID has got a lot of departments prefer that. And their FDNY spec is a rugged hose. Give them a shot. Take the Key challenge. That means try to kick it.
And visit their booth at FDIC.
Yes. Yes.
Shameless. Shameless.
All right. Well, hey, Steve, a little bit. Yeah. Because we're going under the assumption that everybody knows what water.
Okay. So.
And yeah, the hydrodynamics of a fire stream, if you can, and nobody knows it better than you, Steve.
Well, I wouldn't say that. There's several people that know it a hell of a lot better than me, but I just try to regurgitate what I've learned. So, you know, the big thing with water mapping and UL, a lot of people think I was against a lot of the exterior stuff, and it's nothing further from the truth. I just don't think we put apples to apples for a long time, and now that we've done that, I think we're starting to really learn the full picture of what they did. And I personally, after being up there watching it, appreciate the hell out of it. But when we talk about water mapping, remember that a lot of people think that when we put water to the ceiling, that it comes straight down, and there's nothing further could be from the truth. If it's a smooth surface, drywall, lath, plaster, any of that sort of thing, when that stream, depending on the angle of the stream, hits the surface, the velocity of the stream is going to take it, run it across the ceiling, and it's going to drop down the back wall. The actual return we get on the products burning in the room is not huge. As we increase the angle and steepness of the angle, then we start getting more return directly into the room and on the contents. So where the rubber meets the road on these type 2 fires with the metal deck roof, and Cap Dugan, you know, with a metal deck roof is a whole nother animal. I mean, it is an animal of its own. And I know very few truck companies who are A, experienced enough, B, good enough to get up there in a timely manner and get a hole cut in a metal deck roof. It's just so challenging. But a metal deck roof being corrugated, so it's got corrugations in and out. And then you also have the steel bar joists. With that being said, as I take that stream high, and that stream's up very high, when I hit those corrugations, that stream's going to hit the corrugations and be deflected directly down. So you're not getting the penetration deep enough into the fire, especially if it's a storeroom fire. My buddy Tim Collette uses the term organized hoarding. And it's really true, because you have such a variety of things like Captain Dugan and Bill, you guys talked about, that are stored in these back rooms. It's truly organized hoarding. You have a little bit of everything back there. But when we hit that stream and it hits the top and hits the metal deck, the deflection's going straight down. So don't get caught up in the concept that, do I need to put water high? Absolutely, we do. We got to cool the steel. That's absolutely true. But don't be scared to bring your stream down and penetrate to what's really on fire. And I think we'd be remiss talking about these things if we didn't talk about partition walls just a little bit more, because I don't think a lot of people understand what a partition wall is. And basically, it's a wall that goes between the retail area and the storage area, and it simply goes 1 to 2 feet higher than the drop ceiling. So you have a wide open void. It could be 2 feet, it could be 6 foot, it could be 8 foot of a wide open void. That's a hell of a lot of smoke and products of combustion that we're talking about that we're leaving unchecked. And I think that was one of the contributing results in Memphis, was when they sent the truck back there and they started pulling ceiling. That's when everything came down behind them with a backdraft, because it's all up there boiling. It's just waiting for the right time. So whether, you know, you get that cock loft explosion, the smoke explosion, or a backdraft, all of these things are not good for us. And I want to tag on one other thing to that. And I'm a huge proponent, Pat, when you were talking about, Use the deck gun. I think it's a great move. I get that. I'm a big positioning guy, though. I hate giving up my positioning for the truck. I know that pains me to say, Mike, but it does. I love the position for the truck when I can, because they do help us. But I hate giving up that front to use the deck gun. So I've gone to an Elkhart Ram or any of those 2.5-inch monitors, because you're looking at 500 gallons a minute right now. And in my staffing and in limited staffing jobs, I could accomplish that with one person. I could accomplish that 500 gallon a minute hit with one person with 100 or 50 foot section, 2.5, and not give up positioning of the truck. You know,
we've had that same discussion straight. This is very coincidental because we were just having these same discussions. I said the same thing you just said. Couple incidences though where we couldn't get down the gangways because there was so much fire. So now the options, that option is gone. So that gun going to the rear is the only option of getting those porches. So now it's just a tough debate is what kind of conditions are you going to arrive to? Can you pull that line down the gangway and get back there? Maybe not.
You know, but the advantage of those small monitors is even if you have those things interior, if you have a 100-foot bundle of 2-inch, you can stretch right off of those things. Sure. You can extend right up. You make you're talking about your big hit. Mike, you talked about a big hit. Pat, you did. You make your big hit with this thing. I have a 100-foot bundle of 2-inch. Guess what I do?
Sure.
I screw it right on the end, and we're going to work. Right. And, you know, I'm going to just throw a 2-inch plug out there because I don't think we talk about it enough. 2.5-inch hose, I'm not saying get rid of 2.5-inch hose. I'm not saying it's the wrong line. I'm not saying any of those things. But in staff-limited jobs, we need greater than 200 gallons a minute going into these things. We cannot take 1.75 inches into these things and expect to be successful. So when I look at a 2-inch versus 2.5, okay, I prefer 1.16 inches on my 2-inch line. That's 240 gallons a minute at 50 PSI. You're looking at 87 pounds nozzle reaction. Your 2.5-inch and an eighth, 265 gallons a minute. 50 PSI, 98 pounds nozzle reaction. So I'm losing 11 pounds nozzle reaction. But to me, here's where the rubber meets the road on staffing. Let's look at water weight alone, just water weight. I'm not talking hose weight, coupling weight, just water weight. In your average, in a real 2-inch hose, you're looking at 133 pounds per 100 feet, okay? You're looking at 217 pounds per 100 foot in 2.5. So you're looking at about, 85, 87 pounds difference in water weight alone. So my point being, it's great to have the water, but you're looking at 240 gallons a minute versus 265. Are we really going to notice that 25 gallons a minute? And with the nozzle reaction being less, I'm probably going to throw more water with my 2-inch line than I am my 2.5, and it's a hell of a lot more maneuverable. So I'm not saying get rid of 2.5. Please don't take that conversation as that. It's just a good option.
So there's a couple of important things to throw out there too, because we talk a lot about nozzle reaction, and a lot of that is predicated on some math that's really bad. So the Maryland engineering folks have been doing some modern nozzle reaction numbers, which are fascinating. And all the work's not done yet, but it's going to really be interesting once it is. And some of the preliminary stuff is really, really, really interesting. The other thing to remember is that when we're talking about the combinations we're putting together of hose and nozzle and everything else, Steve's talking about traditional smoothbore tips where we have a known flow. And remember how all of that was measured. It was through pipe, through rigid, straight, linear pipe, and then measured. So that's not what a hose looks like. That's not the real world. So it gets really, really different when we start talking about the real world. And that's where we have some great engineering, much like we were talking about earlier about PFOAs and PFOSs. We're having better engineering, better science, better ways to calculate things. And we have better combinations that we can come up with, right? Like GPMs should be our goal. We should not be striving to flow less water. I can't think of many instances when we should be.
I'm not striving to throw less, though, Bobby.
I'm not saying you were. I'm saying just the opposite. I think you're saying when you reduce the amount of weight people have to pull, when you reduce the amount,
they can
in essence flow more water because it's more. Firefighting is about hitting and moving, hitting and moving, hitting and moving. Occasionally you set up, monitors. Occasionally you set up portable guns. But generally when we do that, what are we planning for, right? That we're not planning for a great outcome in those fires, generally speaking. But what I am talking about is that the reason I love these discussions is we got to keep asking more questions. We got to keep looking at different assemblies. We got to keep pushing our manufacturing buddies, our innovators, our thinkers to look at all kinds of different combinations. There's people that have great success with HUMAT valves. There's people who are doing incredible water supply systems you know, and that's why Stretching for Success is such an important class, because I know that Steve is going to show you a wide variety of stretches and
ways. Don't take my word for it, though, right?
Well, you haven't taken your word for it. Not every one of those lays is going to work at every freaking fire.
Pat Dugan, how many times you stretched 2.5 in your career, right? Because you have the staffing. That's your go-to. You guys do that. But, don't take my 2-inch package as yours. You have to make it yours. You have to do the research.
And you have to
do these things.
This is going to sound bizarre, but there's no always and no nevers. You're going to find yourself doing stuff you never thought you would ever do because it was the right thing to do with that fire.
But you have to do it for you. You have to come up with your own. I cannot take FDNY's package in the city of Columbus. We're a 1600 man job. Does that model fit us? No, it does not. Does my Columbus model fit for you, Pat, in Chicago, or you, Cap Gustin, in Miami-Dade? No. So I think it's a big problem in the fire service today that whatever the hot thing on YouTube is, guess what? That's what we need to do. Stop. No justice. You have to do you. You have to do the research, apply it to how many people are on your rig. What's the demographics of your geographical area? You know, my district is different than most districts in the city of Columbus. We do things a little differently. Our hose loads are a little different based on that.
And the important thing about why we would do these hump day hangouts and why we push FDIC and even fire engineering is we'll publish articles. I'll publish articles all the time with things I really don't agree very much with, but they're valid. Not something I would do on my job or that I endorse, but it's a valid point. And you got to have the discussion, right? You gotta have the discussion so that you can step inside that other guy's shoes or gal's shoes or whatever shoes, you know, pink fluffy dinosaur shoes, and understand why they think that, right?
Yeah.
Why do they think that? And it doesn't mean you have to even agree after that. You can say, okay, I can see why we think that, but you're wrong.
If it works for you.
Bingo.
Everybody trying to take just a mold of whatever. Well, FDNY does that. We have to do that. But doesn't mean it's gonna fit our model and our goals of our target flows. And that's the other thing we talked about, flows. You have to determine what's your department's target flow. If you don't have a target flow to start with, you can never do a hose and nozzle evaluation. It goes completely backwards against anything we do to go, I want this hose. Well, hold on. What's your target flow? Start there and work backwards. Here's my target flow. Here's your options.
You better know how to determine your flow.
Yep. Yep.
You know, if you don't know how to use a pedo gauge, then I can't help you because I don't have enough time to go that base.
We make this job a hell of a lot harder than it is. I truly believe that. We make this job a hell of a lot harder. You know, Andy Frederick said it years and years and years ago. And if you go back to his FDIC keynote, don't worry about the nozzle kid, right? I was sitting in the audience watching that.
And Andy's impacted
my career, right? Got to be in that year. I started
Andy's actual book, which authorized by his family, who will receive the money for it, not a pirated copy illegally and maliciously and horribly stolen from a widow of 9/11 by persons unnamed, will be available for sale soon at FDIC. So good. I hope that everyone would buy a copy of Andy's book. His daughter Michelle is currently writing the intro for it, and we'll have it available. And all the money will go to his widow and children who have authorized the publication, along with all of the photographers in the book who have authorized its publication and distribution. So that's another thing to look forward to at FDIC, because there's nothing worse than stealing from a widow.
Yeah, I think we all agree on that.
That's pretty much the end of the discussion there.
I think that's a good point to close, Bobby.
Yeah, that's it. That's a good point. Don't steal from widows and orphans.
Well, you know, there's no No rookies here, no candidates for Pat's, Pat's jargon. No candidates. We're old timers, and yet we're still hungry for knowledge and consummate students of the fire service.
And, taking notes. yeah. I took a ton of notes from what Pat said because I'm terrible at phone.
And we never stop being hungry like that. We're lifelong, career-long students of the fire service. And
I think the other thing too. I think the other thing too to dovetail is we're not certain. In other words, we think these things work. They work most of the time, but every now and then we get surprised. You know,
knowledge without experience is theory. And I want to expand on that. Just if I could have 2 minutes.
Yeah,
sure. Go ahead.
I think it's very important. Knowledge without experience is theory, and everything I just provided. Guess what? To everybody out there listening, should be theory. It's my knowledge because I've done it, but it should be theory to you until you get your ass off the couch and go out there and what? Flow the water and do it. Everything we talk about should be theory to everyone watching. Yes, all the experience on this panel is huge, but don't take my word for it. Don't take Bill Gustin's word for it. Don't take Captain Dugan or Bobby Hall or Patty Brown. Don't take our word for it. Get off your ass and prove us right or prove us wrong if you feel that way. If you stay in your lane and talk about what you do and what works for you, guess what happens? Good things happen. Everybody stays in their lane. Good things happen.
And the other thing to dovetail on with that is that just because it worked the last time doesn't mean it's going to work next time. Yep. Past success is no predictor of future success. It's just a past success. Doesn't mean you so always be ready to improvise. Always be ready to innovate. Always be ready to, you know, always be ready to call an audible, you know what I mean? Or just say, hey, whoa, you know? It's okay to roll up and go, whoa, whoa, you know?
Reset, hit the reset button,
yeah, reset.
Right?
Or help, you know, help Mr. Wizard, you know what I mean? Yeah.
So vet the information, that's all I can tell you. That's my closing point. Vet it.
Yeah.
Or take somebody's word for it.
No, yeah.
I want to thank our friends at Key and for their support. And thank goodness for American capitalism and innovation. So we still have somewhat of a capitalist economy, I guess, that it used to be inch and three quarter or first inch and a half and two and a half. Well, now their industry has developed hose that approximates the flow of a two and a half, but with the weight, I'm not going to lie to you, it's not exactly as easy as inch and three quarter, but closer to the maneuverability and skill sets and staffing of inch and three quarter than for the two and a half. So I mean, you gotta hand it to the hose industry that they are listening to us. And I just happen to be using Key. So.
Go to FDIC. They're all listening to us. Seriously. They're hungry to hear what you have to say. Everybody, whether they're building extrication tools, whether they're building turnout gear, hose, fire apparatus, those folks, and when you talk to half of them, they're on the job or they're retired from the job or they're volunteers or they left the job due to an injury. They're 99% of those folks have skin in the game, just like you and I. And you know, they'd love to hear, don't think for 1 minute that they wouldn't like to hear an honest opinion or critique or suggestion or idea, because they really do care. They're great people. They really are. They really
Steve,
are.
I hope you and Pat would be willing to come back. And because I think we could go on to a lot of other things. You mean no. I didn't even talk. I happened to hear from Jimmy Davis that Pat Brown is knowledgeable. He's an engineer. You're an engineer. You're a fire engineer.
Oh, and Dan DeGrasse says you missed an appointment, so you need to call him.
So what I think, so that is, you do have a strong background, Pat, in pump operation, water supply, correct?
Yes.
Oh, and hey, can we do one thing? I want to shout out to my company. Peter, could we throw those pictures up before we leave? It has to do with water supply.
Pete's getting a sandwich.
Yeah, let's see. Standby. He says standby.
It'll take him a second. Right. Let
me tell you the story. There were mutual aid to a municipality that borders their district. And can you show the other one first? Turns two. Show the other two first, and then come back to this.
Can we say maximizing water?
Now, those are hand lines in Miami-Dade.
Right? Have you seen Ricky Stevens? Are you kidding me?
That's right.
Let's throw another one. Okay. All right. It's an extremely long lay. So when the company, my former company, when they came in on this, this is a municipality, Hialeah. And they called us for mutual aid. Well, and then go back to the previous picture. A lot of departments use large diameter hose as if it was, go to the previous picture, Pete. Oh, there we go. All right. Yeah. As if it was a giant, long, hard suction hose. That is a four-way valve. You had mentioned, Bobby, a Humat, and that is a particular brand. This is a different brand. But the purpose of this is to overcome the friction loss in the supply line, which is a very long supply line. And the way they do that is that they take suction from this valve into the intake of their pump, pump it back out, back through the valve. So now you have pump pressure rather than just water main residual pressure overcoming the friction loss. So you can increase your flows. Now, it doesn't make water. It's not going to make water, but it's going to maximize the available water from that hydrant because you're overcoming the friction loss in a very long lay of hose.
And you don't have to use another piece of apparatus in order to do it. Oftentimes you can place another piece of apparatus in that long stretch.
And I also would be remiss, our dear friend, Paulie
Shapiro.
Paulie's book is out. I've ordered two of them, one for me and one for my friend. And Paulie, if you're watching, I've ordered them. When they come in, I'm going to send them to you so you can sign them. There it is. So if you're out there, we love you, Paulie. And congratulations on your book. And I think we'll finish up with that. For everybody on the panel today, God bless you. Stay safe. Stay healthy. Our brothers and sisters out that have been watching. And we'll see you next month with another hangout.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Bobby. Thanks, guys.
Hey, God bless.